Good afternoon, and thank you all for coming this afternoon. I'd also like to thank Samantha for organizing this session and inviting my participation. I would like to also add one comment. Much of the work I'm going to report on today is very much inspired by a truly dedicated public health professional, Dan Volz, and I'm sorry he can't be here to hear me say that. So my job today is to teach you all about unconventional gas development from shale formations 101 in about 6 minutes, and in doing so, prepare the way for the talks that follow me, which will highlight some very specific vectors for bad things to happen to public health from this process. So I need to instruct you on how the process works and also point out some of the things that can go wrong so that you can better understand the talks that follow me. So please be patient. And I have no conflicts and no relationships to disclose. I'm no longer on the payroll of the oil and gas industry. That was in a prior life. So in order to instruct you on fracking 101, and fracking, by the way, is the wrong word, which you'll understand shortly, I've chosen to present my material to you in the form of three myths. Everybody likes myths. Christmas, Easter Bunny. The industry also has some myths, and I'm going to concentrate on three of them, and by concentrating on them, I'm going to also instruct you on how the whole process works and what can go wrong. So the three I've chosen is that fracking, hydraulic fracturing, is a 60-year-old well-proven technology, which means nobody should worry about it. Nothing can go wrong. It's been done forever, millions of times. So why are we here today? Second one is fluid migration, gas and liquids that are supposed to either stay down there or only come up through the well. How do they get outside the well? So that's called fluid migration, and the industry says that that's very rare. Well, rare is in the eye of the beholder or the nose of the smeller. So we'll talk about what is rare and what is not and what the industry knows about that. And finally, natural gas is a clean fossil fuel. It's the transition fuel to a sustainable fossil energy-free future, which our children and grandchildren are going to enjoy, right? Okay, so let's do the first one. Fracking for gas development is a 60-year-old well-proven technology. False. It's true that fracking is a 60-year-old well-proven technology, but this is not fracking. This is not the fracking of the million wells that are already in the ground. This is the fracking of only about 20,000 wells that are in the ground in a couple of states. It's a relatively new version of fracking, which is 10 to 100 times larger in the volume of fracking fluid, 10 to 100 times larger in the amount of waste produced, in much more spatially and temporally invasive of the countryside. There are four technologies that had to concurrently come together, all of them invented in the last 20 years or so. Directional drilling. Wow, everybody knows that you go to a well and you drill vertically down, and down here, under ordinary circumstances, conventional circumstances, there's a pool of gas down here. You tap into it if you're lucky. If you miss, you have a dry hole. The gas goes up, and you move a couple miles away and start over again. But to get gas out of shale, where the gas is everywhere, so if this is the shale formation, the gas is everywhere. So you have to drill everywhere. But you have to drill in such a way that you have a directional well. That is, the well is going along the shale, not just into it or through it. So that's one technology. But because the lateral part of the well, this part, can be a mile or two long, you need, pardon the French, a hell of a lot of frac fluid, on the order of 5 to 10 million gallons in each well. Okay. So somebody had to invent how a process, the machinery, for getting a very large volume of fluid down a pipe that's 2 or 3 miles long, that's only 6 inches in diameter at 15,000 pounds per square inch. In other words, 10,000 horsepower pumps on the back of a truck that you see rolling down the highway all the time. Water dissipates too much energy from friction. Water is not slippery enough. You wouldn't put water in your engine as lubricant, would you? You'd put a hydrocarbon, oil. So somebody had to invent slick water, a chemical concoction that would make the water slipperier so that it works better. And finally, the whole process geologically only works if you have clustered pads. Pads means the area in which you're drilling. You don't have one here and another one 10 miles away. You have one here and another one a half a mile away. And on each pad, you don't just have one well, you have many wells, 8, 10, 12, 16, 20. The largest pad that I know of right now in the continental United States has 52 wells on one pad. So all those technologies had to come together, and they came together as recently as 2007. That's not 60 years old, it's not a million wells, it's about 20,000 wells. between the period of the early 1990s and 4 years ago. So myth number one dispelled, fracking for gas development is not a 60-year-old well-proven technology. Fracking for unconventional shale gas development is a relatively recent technology. Therefore, so what? The studies on health impact from solid, liquid, and gas emissions, either purposeful or accidental, from this very invasive, heavy industrial process, have not been done. We don't know how to predict in the future the rate of human health effects, the people, things that you're most concerned about. We don't have the data because it's a new process. All right, next myth that will help you further understand the process. Fluid migration from faulty wells is a rare phenomenon. I guess you can all understand that if you're going to invest $5 million to drill a well into a shale formation to get gas, you only want one thing to happen, and that is that gas comes up the well and into your pipeline. Anything else that comes up outside the well is bad. That's called a faulty well. The well has lost its wellbore integrity, to use engineering terminology. So the industry claims that that's very rare, therefore we should not worry about it. So let me show you what loss of wellbore integrity looks like with a video. This is the well head. This is what you see sticking out of the ground. When the drilling is over, the hydrofracking is over, they've connected this pipe coming up from the ground to a pipeline that takes eventually gas to your house. Anybody notice anything? This is not my hot tub. This is methane and other hydrocarbons bubbling up outside the well. Two bad things can happen here. That methane or other hydrocarbons coming up outside the well can find their way into an underground source of drinking water, also known as lighting your faucet on fire. Or, if they don't somehow stop the methane from bubbling by capping the well in such a way that they force that gas into an underground source of drinking water, that well now becomes a source of methane migration into the atmosphere forever. As long as there's gas down there, that gas keeps bubbling up unless they somehow stop it. And stopping it is very, very difficult. So that's what it looks like. And the industry says it's rare. Here's industry data, Schlumberger data. You all like bar charts at this time of the afternoon. This is the age of a large number of wells that were surveyed for faultiness. That is, they had gas or other hydrocarbons coming up outside the well. This is the percentage of wells with a bad problem. You'll notice that when wells are brand new, less than 1 year old, about 5% of them leak. Is that rare? Well, it might be if you're only going to have five wells, right? Because then statistically none of them would leak. How many wells are there going to be in the Marcellus Shale formation alone? What does the industry predict? 250,000 wells. What's 5% of 250,000? Somebody do the numbers real quick. That's 12,500 leaky wells. Okay. As the wells age, just like every other industrial process or every other engineering artifact that we build, whether it's your car or an artificial hip, as they age, bad things can happen at increasing rates. So when wells get very old, we're up to a point where one can expect about half of them to leak. That's industry data. That's not from Cornell University or some other egg-headed academic. This is from an egg-headed academic, a colleague of ours at Duke University. Which published the paper. They published a paper earlier this year that some of you have read about where they actually went to Pennsylvania and New York and they tested people's private water wells for the presence of methane. And the obvious result from this data here is distance to the nearest gas well of your water well, distance between your water well and the nearest gas well. This is the methane concentration in your water. Now, this data is not a proof of causality. It is a proof of coincidence. The closer you are, the higher the probability you're going to have high concentration of methane in your water well. Why? Because wells leak. Put the three slides I just showed you together, and one can start to draw conclusions. This gray area is the area of concern. This is where, by federal law, you should start getting concerned about methane concentration in your water. Methane is not hazardous to your health unless you're breathing it in an enclosed space, in which case you can be asphyxiated, or if it's in a confined space and the concentration gets too high and there's a spark, it becomes explosive. Okay. Another myth, fluid migration from faulty wells is a rare phenomenon. Not true. The truth is it's a well-known chronic phenomenon. It's been around since the beginning of well drilling, and it's occurring at an expected rate. If you were to ask me to predict the rate at which there would be faulty wells in Pennsylvania, I tell you right now, roughly 5% in the first year, roughly 50% after 30 years. How do I know that? Industry data. Do the numbers. What's the health impact? There will be continuous contamination of underground sources of drinking water with drilling fluid, frack fluid, and released hydrocarbons. It's your you have to make the decision as the public how to weigh that. Public health effects, public wealth effects. Health versus wealth, traditional capitalist enterprise in the U.S. Okay, last myth I'm going to address in preparation for the follow-up talks. Natural gas is a clean fossil fuel. By the way, every one of these myths is somewhat true, right? It is rare that wells leak, depending upon your definition of rare. It is true that hydrofracking is a 60-year-old technology, but I told you there's a different kind of hydrofracking going on. It is true that if you burn energy equivalent amounts of coal, oil, and natural gas, the burning of natural gas releases far less carbon dioxide. That's a scientific fact. Therefore, from the point of view only of burning of energy equivalent amounts, natural gas is the cleanest of all fossil fuels. Now, did I say that natural gas is a clean fossil fuel? No. I said it's the cleanest of the three fossil fuels when it's burned in terms of carbon dioxide produced. So let's look at the bigger picture beyond this myth. Most of you have seen this chart. If you haven't, you should be ashamed of yourselves. Because your children want to know about this, and your grandchildren. This is year, for the last 5 years. This is the parts per million of concentration of carbon dioxide in the Earth's atmosphere. Scientifically accepted data. Notice that there is a trend. The carbon dioxide concentration in the Earth's atmosphere is increasing by roughly 2 parts per million per year, and has been for about the last 50 years. So unless you're a climate change denier, and if you are, please leave now, because I don't want to be in your association. We have roughly 30 years before we reach the proverbial tipping point, which most reputable scientists say is about 450 parts per million. At that point, humans' ability to reverse climate change effects will drastically diminish. If we're at 390, and when we get to 450, big bad things begin to happen for our kids, 30 years from now, and our grandkids, we got 30 years to reverse that trend. What happens when you burn natural gas? It's a fossil fuel. You increase carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. But here's what you should know, and many of you probably don't. Here's a graph of methane concentration in the atmosphere, starting from the year 1000. Yeah, we have data from nearly 1,000 years, over 1,000 years ago. Methane concentration was fairly constant until the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, when we started burning large volumes of fossil fuels. And you can see the methane concentration is going up. But it's in parts per billion. So we shouldn't worry about it, right? The carbon dioxide was parts per million. This is parts per billion. Except the fact that from fundamental chemistry, one molecule of methane is anywhere from 30 to 100 times more powerful than a single molecule of carbon dioxide in heat absorption. So methane is a much more potent greenhouse gas than its carbon dioxide, meaning even if a little bit of it leaks, it has the effect of a lot of carbon dioxide, anywhere between 30 and 100 times as much carbon dioxide. Does methane leak during the development of gas from unconventional and conventional sources? Yes, it leaks during the initial frack flowback period when all the fracking fluid comes back and gas comes back with it. It's routinely and continuously vented or burned at the well site, during liquid unloading, during gas processing, and during transmission, storage, and distribution of gas, it leaks into the atmosphere. And research that we've done at Cornell, which I'll show you in a minute, says that things like this, I'll show the video. This is a video taken with a FLIR camera, forward-looking infrared radar, which can be tuned to show hydrocarbons. What you're seeing there in those yellow clouds is hydrocarbon emission from what happens when a well has been drilled and fracked, and they're letting all the frack flowback fluid and gas vent into the atmosphere. Those are clouds. I'll show you the scale here in a minute. It's kind of hard to tell. These are trees. Okay, so these are not little wisps. These are clouds of methane escaping into the atmosphere. Here's some heavy equipment so you can gauge the scale of what you're seeing here. You can't see this with the naked eye. Okay, research that we did at Cornell was published earlier this year says, here's another bar chart for you, late in the afternoon, we compared the grams of carbon equivalent, carbon dioxide equivalent, that's carbon dioxide and the equivalent amount of methane emitted into the atmosphere per unit of energy produced by producing shale gas, conventional gas, coal, and oil. The larger the bar, the worse you are. Okay? So it is true that when you just burn it, that's the direct CO2 output, there's much less CO2 per unit of energy coming from gas than from coal or from oil. But when you add in the effect of methane, which is the pink, you can see that even under the best estimate, the lowest estimate that we come up with, the amount of carbon dioxide equivalents emitted into the atmosphere, which, by the way, has a global health effect. In fact, the largest public health effect you can probably ever imagine, which is global climate change. This bar right here, when I get the cursor back, this bar right here is our lowest estimate. This bar is our highest estimate. So somewhere between that one and that one is probably the truth. So pick a number like that one, and you can see that burning methane, producing and burning methane from unconventional sources is no better than burning coal and no better than burning oil and possibly even worse. So those of you who are going home tonight saying we got all the gas in the world, we can sleep well, we have a transition fuel, the bridge fuel to a sustainable carbon-free energy future, no, wrong. All right, so the myth is that natural gas is a clean fossil fuel. Over its life cycle, unconventional natural gas is likely no cleaner than coal or petroleum, and even conventional gas is on the order of petroleum or coal. It's a fossil fuel. Can't get away from it, and it's non-renewable. Therefore, we have an exacerbation of global climate change, and that's a public health impact. So let me summarize by saying, in my humble opinion, why is this form of fracking, known as slick water, high-volume fracking from long laterals, a higher risk to public health than other energy forms, requires much higher well density, many wells per square mile, requires much more industrial development over large areas, heavy equipment operating everywhere, regardless of zoning, in residential areas, in commercial areas, next to schools, next to hospitals. Can't stop it because oil and gas law overrules local zoning ordinances, operating 24/7, 365, much higher volumes of fracking fluid, millions of gallons per well, much higher volumes of waste fluids and solids containing potentially hazardous materials listed there, and we produce much higher volumes of fugitive emissions of methane. All of that results in the following. As the number of wells and volume of waste increase, obviously the probability of accidental releases of hazardous materials into the air and groundwater increases. That's common sense. Cumulative effects on air and water and health from these and from purposeful emissions into the atmosphere and purposeful releases into groundwater are unknown. The long-term human health impact studies have not been done. Increased production, processing, storage, transportation, and burning of natural gas and its liquid companions increases emission of global greenhouse gases, a large-scale global public health issue. So thank you very much. I hope I prepared the way and explained what you need to know.